Welcome to this Right Risk webinar. Today's webinar will cover two topics, evaluating risk strategies and another topic. I do want to thank, before we move further, the USDA Risk Management Agency and the Right Risk team for sponsoring today's webinar. I am your moderator for this session. I am Jeff Trunell with Colorado State University. I'm an agricultural and business management economist here at CSU and a founding member of the Right Risk team. I will serve as your host for today's webinar, but I'm only able to do so through the help and assistance of many others working behind the scenes to make these presentations possible. Our team members come from a number of Western states, and without their support and the support of their institutions, these webinar offerings would not be possible. Today's speakers are John Hewlett from the University of Wyoming and Jay Parsons at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Both are also founding members of the Right Risk team. We will provide more information about each of them and the introduction as we begin the programs. First, a few housekeeping details. As we proceed, please enter your questions for the presenters in the chat window found in the lower left of your screen, as identified by the yellow box there. Working behind the scenes, the team will put those questions up for the presenters. Please use the chat window to enter questions or to report any technical questions. As we all know, computers are wonderful mechanisms, but sometimes we have to overcome some problems. But without the internet, without computers, webinars would not be a reality. So, if you have any technical questions, please enter those into that box or your questions, and then when you're finished, click on that little icon to the right, and we will take care of things from there. Another housekeeping issue is if you are having trouble reading the screen at any point during today's webinar, you may want to try the full screen button in the upper right-hand corner of your computer monitor or other screen. This button switches between the view you see now and a view where the presentation slides cover the entire screen, making that smaller text easier to read. Please note that while in the full screen mode, you will be unable to see the chat window. So simply press the button again to reveal the chat window to enter any questions you might have, or if there's technical assistance. Evaluating risk strategies for farms and ranches. John Hewlett is our speaker on this topic. As I said, he's from Laramie at the University of Wyoming and is a founding member of Right Risk. With that, John, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you enlighten us with how to evaluate risk strategies.
Okay, Jeff. Well, thank you for that introduction and for the opportunity to offer a few insights on a module we're working on. That module is titled Evaluating Risk Strategies, and it is online with the intention of assisting users to better understand their strategies for managing risk. Today, we'd like to cover a couple of the topics addressed by the module to give you a feel for the overall set of topics that are listed within it. We have this short description here covering everything from an introduction to strategies for managing risk to a discussion of how those strategies fit with the risk management goals of the management of the operation, various mechanisms for managing risk and how they might be used, how to evaluate the effectiveness of risk strategies, changing strategies, incorporating learning over time as adjustments may be necessary, and then finishing up with the seven characteristics of a good decision and how they might be incorporated into developing a risk management strategy moving forward. So a lot of ground there. covered by the overall module, but today we'd like to just cover a couple of those, the first of which is risk management strategies, and then we'll move on to discuss a little bit of the coverage of evaluating risk strategies as touched on in the module. So we'll start off with what is a strategy? That word's used a lot by different people to mean different things. But in general, a strategy should outline actions that utilize the resources available or provide a means of getting needed resources in order to accomplish a specific goal. In popular usage, strategy is often used to describe the means by which a person or business plans to use those resources to reach the desired ends. And in this way, a strategy implies the three points listed on the screen, which are a goal, there are some resources, and then there are some ideas about actions that might be taken or an approach that might be used to attain that goal using the resources that are available. So establishing risk management goals and objectives might be a place where you'd start then. And so they're one method for describing what that future should look like. Thinking through the steps can definitely help all the different people that might be involved in the action see what resources will be required, as well as what changes must be made in the current operations, and then what some of the milestones might be along the way as they move from where they are to where it is they hope to end up. So most farm and ranch operations have some idea of where they're headed. Fewer have formal written plans, and even a smaller number seem to have well-articulated, written goals that are shared with everybody concerned. Those formal goals can provide the basis for monitoring business activity, give input to management decision-making, and offer insights into appropriate contingency responses when external forces require some sort of mid-course corrections, which often seems to be the case. In the military, a strategy is a maneuver designed to deceive or even surprise an enemy. To be successful, a strategy requires all levels of management and labor to be aligned. As such, the strategy outlines a step-by-step approach that we're planning to use to reach that desired outcome. Now, risk management plans are concerned with describing the specific steps and the timetable required for reaching the goals, and that includes the how and when of the process. So sometimes this phase is called action planning or programming or even implementation. Whatever terms it might be used, it refers to the list of the actions that must be accomplished to achieve the risk goals and the timing of those activities. So strategies for managing risk or the consequences of a negative event may vary by source of risk and level of protection already in place. So not all strategies are necessarily going to be appropriate for all different types of negative events we might be looking at managing. So in general, the options range everywhere from avoiding the risky practice to possibly accepting the risk. Between these two extremes are several possibilities for managing risk to a more acceptable level by perhaps reducing the risk, transferring the risk, or increasing the capacity to bear the risk should those negative events occur. The risk avoidance is concerned with reducing or eliminating the possibility of events with unfavorable consequences. With foresight and the adoption of preventative measures, many situations can and probably should be avoided. So when considering both the risk and the possible preventative measures to take, the process should include both familiar and unfamiliar sources of risk. So avoiding the risk is accomplished when a manager takes an active decision to not engage in a particular practice or activity due to the level of risk that might be involved. Next strategy we might think about is transferring the risk, which is an approach for shifting risk from one party to another, usually outside the business. Now, this can be accomplished through insurance policies, by contracting, or by other sorts of agreements with a third party that might be willing to share in the negative consequences in return for a premium that is paid in advance. Evaluating insurance and marketing contracts can be frustrating if the person only does so after the fact. Once the outcome is determined, it's certainly tempting to declare the decision good or bad based on whether the contract worked out in one's own favor. That's really a bad habit to get into. Managers should take a sincere effort to evaluate the decision at the time it's made in terms of what it costs in premium and, in the case of marketing contracts, the potential upside against the premium cost associated with transferring that risk to a party outside of the farm or ranch organization. So if we look at insurance as a mechanism for transferring the risk, the risk is transferred from an individual to a corporation or some other party that can more readily tolerate the risk. The purchaser pays more than the expected indemnity to avoid ever being exposed to the risk. Now, the party on the other side of the transaction earns income from the risk premiums, and in this way it can afford to pay for accidents and catastrophes because it's pooling that risk over many different people, operations, or even types of coverage. So insurance contracts have the effect of truncating the net income distribution, as you might notice on the screen there, where the purchaser is protected against downward movements on the downside in exchange for paying the insurance premium every year. So marketing tools like a put option also work in exactly the same way as insurance does in this case. Contracting is another approach for transferring risk for one person or a business to another. And in this case, futures and options markets are examples of this type of contract or a transaction. Forward contracts for livestock and selling grain to an elevator before harvest are also other examples. So keep in mind that the incentives must exist for each side in the exchange for the two different parties to see an advantage to locking in a sale agreement and giving up the flexibility to do something different at a later date. So again, there needs to be an advantage on both sides if there's going to be any incentive for them to get together. Now, controlling risk is another kind of an interesting dimension. It's by far the most active form of managing risk. However, it is also very important that the decision maker keep in mind that the goal of risk management is to manage risk to a more acceptable level, not necessarily to minimize the risk when you're looking at these various alternatives. In many situations, this can best be accomplished by finding strategies that improve the level of expected returns rather than reduce the variation in outcomes. In general, controlling risk is taking management action to change the outcomes for an event by either making negative outcomes less likely or possibly reducing the consequence should they actually occur. We should always keep in mind that it's very seldom that the operator can choose to do both at the same time. It's usually an either-or situation. So managing with the intent to reduce the chances of bad events happening is just common sense for most ag operators. For example, a piece of machinery can break down at any moment. The risk of machinery breakdown can be controlled by properly maintaining the machine, which reduces the chance it will break down, and it extends its useful life as well as saving money on costly repairs. The manager must compare the extra expense of maintaining the machine with the benefit that that has by reducing the probability of a breakdown to evaluate whether or not that actually might be a good strategy for them. Of course, methods for reducing the chances of bad events are not free, nor do they cover every situation. So some events are simply too expensive to reduce the chances for, while other events are so unlikely that the manager basically should not worry about ever having to worry about managing them or having them occur. Now, controlling the impact is another method for managing risk, and it involves using strategic risk management tools like diversification, extra reserves, or maintaining flexibility to reduce the impact of a bad outcome or increase the benefits of a good outcome. Now, diversification is likely already clear to most farmers and ranchers. Following a practice, for example, of growing more than one crop or operating a farm with both crop and livestock enterprises can be a method for reducing the impact on the overall operation when, say, markets turn down or production levels are lower than expected. As with other strategies for reducing impact, diversification comes with a unique set of costs. Managing a farm with multiple crops requiring separate equipment, each challenges with separate marketing and management challenges creates a lot of additional overhead. Such operations are clearly more resilient in a changing economy. However, they also limit the possibilities for participating in upward trending markets because the strategy restricts their production to only a portion of the total possible in any one market. Having extra cash reserves on hand will definitely reduce the impact of poor revenue in a given year, but evaluating this strategy is a matter of considering what it costs in potential income to keep those extra reserves on hand versus the earnings that they might bring in another use. However, holding extra reserves has a cost as well. The value of this strategy must be compared with others available before simply selecting this one as the best. And then finally, maintaining flexibility. There are certainly circumstances where the decision maker may feel that there is not enough information to justify making a clear choice. It may be clear that doing nothing is not the best course to follow either. In such cases, a good strategy might be to commit to a set of smaller changes or adjustments, following practices similar to what were used in the past, but retain the flexibility to make further changes when it's clear that they are warranted. In this way, the manager is attempting to remain proactive in circumstances that suggest changes needed, while retaining the capacity to be more fully responsive as better data or clearer signals become available. And then finally, accepting risk. Now, some risks are too costly to control, or the negative consequence may be too small to bother with managing. In these cases, management may choose to simply accept the risk as a cost of doing business, with the idea that the business will cover the entire cost should a negative event actually occur. This approach is sometimes referred to as self-insuring. Basically, we would shoulder all the costs should that bad event ever occur. Now, keep in mind that taking on risk is usually associated with some sort of potential reward. That's where a lot of the profit in farming and ranching actually exists. However, this should be done with careful evaluation of the potential impacts and the willingness to accept the probability of their occurrence. And so with that, Jeff, that's about what I have to share from the risk strategies section of the module. I'll turn it back to you now to allow Jay to cover the remaining segment of the module we were looking to get through this morning.
Okay. Thanks, John. That was a great presentation, and it's quite evident that you have many years of experience coaching farmers, ranchers, and others as they attempt to better manage their businesses. Your presentation also suggests that you have gone through this process of evaluating risk strategies with your own operation, having multiple enterprises there outside of Laramie. A couple of questions have been put forth by people participating in this audience, so if you don't mind, I'd like to put those forward to you. The first, you mentioned avoiding risk as a strategy that may be appropriate for some to consider. Could you give us an example or two of what that might look like?
Sure. examples I often talk about are cases we run into here in Wyoming, at least. Do you hear them around in the west of the rest of the West? Things like people considering running both cattle and sheep. There's cultural things and stigmas against that. So some operations, especially in the last couple of decades, have chosen to focus just on one. But there are a lot of folks that now basically run both. The reason for maybe not running both types of enterprises would be that you view that there's lack of familiarity on your part, or that you're not clear about how to market those animals. Another example often comes up would be holding calves to yearlings. There's a lot of research that suggests that doing so is to your financial advantage, and yet clearly running yearlings has additional fencing and holding, equipment issues tied to it, but also a lot of marketing implications. And a lot of operators just choose not to do that, rather focusing more on an enterprise they're more familiar with. So those are a couple of examples. In the cropping side of things, clearly there'd be people that have, you know, chosen to focus on just one or two crops where maybe other crops are viable in their, you know, in their area of production. And they do that either because it's simpler or because they, you know, reduce some of the input costs, equipment costs, et cetera. And in that way, they, you know, are sort of focusing on one or two enterprises in an attempt to avoid the risk that might be bound up in some of those other alternatives. It's not necessarily the best strategy for everyone, but the challenge is for folks to kind of think that through in terms of the risk that these alternatives might imply for the overall operation, and then make a choice as to whether or not, you know, that actually seemed like the better strategy, or if maybe one of these other mechanisms available for controlling risk or managing risk would be a more appropriate in the situation that they're facing. So hopefully that helps a little bit.
Yeah, thank you very much. A second question that was put up is, you talked about increasing reserves in order to control the impact. This person is not clear how that might apply to a real-world situation. Could you help us better understand what you mean with that?
Yeah, of course, the example I talked about earlier was cash reserves, and clearly having extra cash on hand to meet unexpected expenses is would be a great luxury, although a lot of operations don't necessarily have that that opportunity to do so. And to do so actually costs clearly any interest that you might be able to earn on it or returns if you invested that money into an active enterprise. But there are other examples that come to mind that we maybe don't think of all that often, like holding extra hay in a haystack or having other inputs that we, you know, buy in at a discount because we're buying in a quantity that lets us get a lower price. Those may be really good strategies depending on how it fits in with the rest of your management, but they might also be expensive strategies. I guess part of the point of bringing this up is that those sorts of strategies are, in fact, risk management strategies, and they certainly can save money, but they also may be costing you some money. In the case of extra hay in the haystack, I mean, if you had the opportunity to sell that hay, clearly leaving it in the stack for someday when an emergency might come up has a cost to it versus the cash you might be able to receive. And then, you know, if that negative event occurred, maybe you could use that cash to buy in hay in that circumstance. If you view it as a fairly rare event, maybe selling the hay is a better strategy on a regular basis versus holding it and foregoing the extra income that might represent. So I think we do a lot of this type of increasing reserves as a strategy within typical ag operations, but we don't often think about the negative consequence of that inventory and the cost that it may represent to the operation. So challenge here is really to just think that through again and to consider whether that's the best strategy or if there may be some other alternatives for managing risks that may help you achieve your goals that don't require you to hold those reserves.
Sure. That's a great answer. I know as I've been around, like many of us, working with producers, you'll see two of something or extra hay, like you say, in the stackyard. And I know it's a risk management, but we don't even think of it as having a cost associated with it and looking at that. So that was a great explanation of that. So wanting to be sensitive to people's time, I want to thank you again for your enlightening presentation, John. I believe the producers, agency professionals, and others gained some quite useful information from your presentation and your answering those questions. I will share with the audience at a later time after Jay speaks on how they can access both presentations and additional information. Again, I'll do that after Jay's presentation at the end. So thanks again, John. I'd like to move on to our next speaker, Dr. Jay Parsons. Jay has a teaching, research, and extension appointment at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Jay was formerly at Colorado State University and has worked with many producers around the country. He's also actively involved with his family's farm in western Nebraska, and I know also with his wife's agricultural business. So with that, Jay, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you talk about evaluating strategies.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, John, for your presentation on risk management strategies and what those look like. I'd like to move on now and talk a little bit about evaluating strategies. So some of this stuff John has already mentioned, so there'll be a little bit of a overlap in terms of risk itself. Just keep that in mind as we go through this. Evaluating strategies and evaluating decisions that go into them are intertwined, all along the way in the process. So let's start here with just this idea that risk management is a necessary but sometimes frustrating activity. As John alluded to before when he was talking about bad outcomes sometimes coming from good decisions, very good risk management strategies and decisions can still sometimes lead to bad outcomes because of the uncertainty involved. We never really know how the future will actually turn out until it actually does. That is why it's important to develop the habit of judging the quality of your risk management strategies based on the information available at the time the strategy was selected and not solely on those final results. Results are obviously important, but even high-quality, sound risk management strategies don't come with guarantees when we're faced with significant uncertainty. However, okay, if you do it right, they should be leading to more positive results more consistently. Another point to keep in mind is that a strategy is not carried out by a single decision. A strategy requires a series of decisions to keep things on track to achieve the desired outcome. As a result, strategies can fail for a number of reasons, but the most likely reason they flounder is when decision points across time don't add up to provide consistent support for the strategy selected. This can especially be true when various decisions are made and carried out by more than one member of a management team. Where there are more individuals involved, there's a lot of times a great variation in their understanding about a level of commitment to a selected strategy and all the effort that went into deciding that's the way the company wanted to move forward or the farm business wanted to move forward. It's worth repeating, again, that good strategies often don't work. Sometimes uncertainty just gets in the way and things don't work out. But don't let bad results automatically suggest that a better strategy was available at the time you made the decision. On the other hand, don't let good results automatically suggest that your strategy was the right one. You should constantly be in the mode of evaluating that strategy given the information you have available. For example, just because a cropping decision turned out poorly doesn't mean you're going to trash your whole crop rotation and move to something different. On the other hand, it could have turned out great, but that doesn't mean that you aren't headed for potential problems down the road if you continue on the same strategy that you're on. You should constantly be in the mode of evaluating where you are at. So let's talk for just a moment about specific decisions that we call strategic decisions. This might be a little bit overused terminology, and I think it's important to recognize when you are dealing with the strategic decisions. Strategic decisions might be classified as a subset of business decisions that are focused on selecting where the business should go in the future. So they're deciding the direction and selecting the strategy for how forward progress is going to be made. That's what makes it a strategic decision. The decision becomes strategic when the choice being made will guide future decisions. I think that's very important to understand, so I'm going to repeat that. A decision becomes strategic when the choice being made will guide future decisions. That's the easiest way to recognize when you're dealing with a strategic decision. So in the face of making decisions, okay, when you look at the choice you're about to make is something that you know are going to be guiding future choices, then you're probably in the midst of making a very strategic decision. Okay. When it comes to strategic decisions, a lot of people connect it to the concept of irreversibility. Many strategic decisions have an element of irreversibility to them. That's a given, okay? When you are making decisions that are going to require a large quantity of resources to be committed or a corresponding large number of steps to be implemented and management actions to be taken, this becomes very costly to undo. Therefore, we say it has a high degree of irreversibility. Irreversibility is an important element in recognizing the strategic aspect of a decision. However, it does not make all irreversible decisions strategic in and of themselves. Okay, so it's not a necessary and sufficient condition. Conversely, the degree of irreversibility for a particular decision suggests that other decisions that inform and guide that particular choice are more strategic. Let's consider an example, because this can be fairly confusing. Suppose you're a farmer or rancher and you're developing a marketing strategy, and you decide that as part of your strategy, you're going to use one or more contracting tools to look at locking in some at least 50% of your expected production costs. You want to lock in those revenues with prices by the middle of the summer. Okay, so you're sitting there saying, okay, I'm going to make sure I can at least get 50% of my production costs covered here, based off of locking in a contract on my crop. Okay, but you're leaving it open to what that contract might look like. Okay, that's a strategic decision. Okay, it's going to inform and guide future marketing decisions, many of which are irreversible, including the type of contract you actually enter into. So let's say you're a producer and you go in and you enter into a forward cash contract to actually deliver grain to a local elevator at harvest time. Of course, that's a very irreversible decision. You've made a commitment to deliver grain. You didn't have to make that decision itself. You could have done something else to achieve your strategy, but that's the one that you chose to do. That decision itself is not strategic, but it's basically carrying out your strategic plan. Okay, so it's deeply tied and deeply rooted in the overall marketing strategy. So to summarize this a little bit for you, it's just important to keep in mind at all levels that the greater the degree of irreversibility, whether it's a big investment in equipment or land or a marketing decision or hiring an employee or something like that, the greater care and diligence that should be taken in making that decision to make sure it actually aligns with your strategies. Okay, so evaluating strategies is a lot about evaluating the decisions that go into it, okay? Because the decisions are the process by which the strategy is implemented. They're the basic units of choice that the management uses to move the business forward. Those choices are evaluating alternatives, and it's evaluating those alternatives based on criteria that are laid out by the selected strategy that you have in place. So when it comes to evaluating decisions, there's a few key points to remember. Okay, first is where a decision is about moving the business forward. Okay, the assumption is that direction forward has already been determined by the selection of a strategy. Okay, so management has chosen the direction through some sort of process of weighing different factors and considerations and deciding on a strategy. And then you're going to actually make choices in the day-to-day grind that keep you moving in that direction. Second thing is not all decisions are equal in nature. Some, as we've already discussed, are irreversible and require a little more attention because there's a lot of money involved or a lot of considerations in terms of the cost of trying to get back out of that in some way or cover it if it doesn't work out. Some are more strategic decisions. Some are just more day-to-day implementation decisions. Okay. The third thing is that all types of decisions involve taking management action after considering many alternatives, okay, and how it will be carried out and when it will be completed. Okay. Right. So farm and ranch decision makers make thousands of decisions every day. Okay. These decisions shape their lives. They determine their futures. Some of them are very significant. Some of them might seem fairly minor. Some people argue, some of the decision scientists argue, that the ability to make good quality decisions is actually contrary to human nature. We have stress, we have time constraints, we have uncertainty involved, and all of these can amplify into a situation that leads to a lot of mistakes that are difficult to overcome. So I think it's important to understand what a good decision looks like, okay, and get in the habit of trying to make your decisions fit this model. There are seven characteristics of a good decision. In the next few slides, I'm going to take a few moments to talk about the first two on this list and the last two on this list, as they're particularly pertinent to our discussion about evaluating strategies and the decisions that go into implementing. So let's start with the first one, having an appropriate decision frame. To make a good decision, decision makers need more than just a list of choices. An appropriate decision frame captures the context in which the decision is being made. This includes both the internal environment and the external environment. Above all, it also includes the objectives the decision maker is trying to accomplish by making the decision. These objectives are consistent with the strategy the decision is supporting. The second characteristic of a good decision is clear objectives and clear values. Why is this so important? Because the objectives form the decision criteria. They help determine what information to seek. They help explain the decision choice to others. They help determine how important the decision is to the people involved, as well as how much time and effort should be spent in making it. Looking at a decision, the decision maker should clarify or should clearly see how the choice made will help achieve those key strategic objectives it is designed to support. Okay? And it should also clearly see how the values reflected in that choice are better than the other alternatives available at that time. So those are the first two characteristics on this list. Items 3, 4, and 5 here are all very important, but they involve the process of digging in and actually making the choice. Okay, and in the interest of time, we're going to skip over those and go to items 6 and 7. Because they, like items 1 and 2 on this list, are very pertinent to our conversation today about evaluating risk strategies. So choice alignment with values and objectives. Okay, this is similar to characteristic 2 that we talked about, but this is kind of after you've made the choice, making sure that it actually aligns with the values and objectives. So good decisions are choices that are well aligned with decision makers' values and objectives. Okay. These are important factors that may get forgotten in the process of assessing alternatives and making the final selection. Often, it's easy to focus on single objectives when it comes to actually making the selection, and they become to dominate your mindset. But before you actually implement the choice, it's very important to do a quick reflection and make sure that the values and objectives are reflected in that choice so that you prevent that particular decision from moving you away from your strategic priorities. So again, this is all about making sure the decision aligns with the strategy. And then the last characteristic of a good decision is a commitment to implementation. Okay, when the decision maker evaluates a decision, you should carefully consider how committed you are to fully implement the choice. The decision maker wants to be able to say that the choice was implemented completely and with a committed effort to make it a success. Doing this consistently will more consistently produce good results and more consistently implement the strategy as it was intended. With uncertainty, nothing's guaranteed, but as long as you go through the process of making good choices that align with your strategies on a regular basis, you're going to provide the best opportunities to achieve success. So if you've made the choice on a strategy, you're making decisions along the way in the day-to-day operations, and they align with your strategy in terms of the objectives you're trying to achieve and the values you're trying to adhere to and so on and so forth, then it comes down to measuring progress and accomplishments. Managing any business is a challenge, and ag businesses are sometimes the hardest challenges. They are inherently dependent on uncertain weather and production and market risks that go with that. Even for people with a lot of experience, it can present tremendous challenges. Although weather patterns typically follow regular seasonal movements and commodity markets follow regular movements, these things can significantly influence the outcome and the actual manager's experience with a particular strategy. Many managers make decisions with the intention of moving the business in a particular direction rather than to reach a specific performance target. For example, they're more likely to select a crop rotation with the intention of making an overall profit and to manage risk through a strategy of diversification rather than achieve a specific target earnings on each crop or a particular risk goal based on where the field is that the crop is raised. In addition, they're very likely to take into account soil health and fertility, market price, knowledge of the crops that they're actually raising, and a host of other considerations. The point here is that risk is inherent in this process. Okay, as a result, most manage with the objective of making progress toward their goals rather than developing a laser focus on a specific decision. Many aspects of ag repeat from season to season. While there are obvious differences one year to the next, planting, cultivating, and harvest of this year's crop of corn very likely will be similar to last year. With each passing year, the manager gains additional experience in managing the resources employed in raising their crop and or livestock. Changes for most operators is often introduced gradually. This in itself is a risk strategy. Okay? Not everything has changed overnight, even with the prospect of making high earnings. So learning to manage seasonal variations in the production process requires an understanding of the relationship between the options available and the corresponding costs and expected benefits. For many involved in agriculture, this concept is readily associated with advances in technology, especially recently. In the past, we've seen changes in irrigation technology, new fertilizers introduced, availability of new, highly effective chemicals for controlling weeds and insects, and we've also seen some chemicals become less effective in controlling weeds and insects. And then we have the mechanization, okay, all kinds of new equipment coming onto the horizon, and each of these leaves their mark on ag and changes the situation that you're dealing with. These advances give managers greater flexibility with the production approaches available, as well as often increasing the chances of success. When these new techniques and controls become available, they offer managers the flexibility to manage risk and the associated variability better. As such, approaches used in the past may become outdated in terms of how effective they are or in terms of the benefits they return. Today's managers must continue to evaluate strategies and approaches that become possible with new technologies and methods for resource management in order to remain competitive. So with this becomes the importance of updating your goals and objectives. So in certain circumstances for some operations, the continuing need to update these management approaches can lead to the decisions to drop specific strategies that they have followed in the past and to replace them with new strategies. It may even mean no longer growing a certain crop or raising a particular livestock that they've traditionally done in their operation. Such choices can sometimes be very difficult for the individuals involved. In other cases, decision makers may decide that the goals pursued in years past, perhaps by a previous generation, are just no longer possible to achieve, or maybe they're no longer relevant to the operation. As a result, it may be more appropriate to change those goals and objectives for the operation rather than change the approach being used. This can be especially true in recent years when we've seen many advances in technology and labor-saving approaches for traditional ag enterprises. So when is a strategy successful? Consider again our description of a strategy, the means by which a person or a business plans to use resources to reach the ends they desire. In this way, strategies imply that you have a goal, that you have resources to work with, and you have a method or approach for action that leads you towards your goal. Within this context, success would likely be described as goal attainment with minimal resources and actions required. Where a goal has a high priority, the consequences for failing to reach the goal are high. or the probability of a bad outcome increases when the goal is not reached. This suggests that more resources and more actions would be justified. However, as we mentioned earlier, some goals, certain levels of resource use, and beyond some level of action, goal attainment may not be justified. In this light, evaluation of the success or failure of a particular strategy is an exercise in weighing the result or the benefit versus the cost of achieving that success. Certainly, where management has decided to pursue a given strategy, that cost-benefit balance was likely considered. However, the planning and the reality that follows often might be quite different. A strategy is not accomplished through a single decision, remember. Rather, it's a series of decisions that take place over time that are hopefully moving you toward that desired goal. In this way, evaluating the success or failure of a strategy is not accomplished by looking closely at the individual stages, but rather weighing everything together in an attempt to evaluate whether the collective benefits outweigh the identifiable cost. Is the strategy delivering the results that the management had in mind when the choice was made? So some final points here. Keep in mind that while a strategy may be judged as success after a period of time has elapsed, there may be adjustments needed for that strategy to continue working, or alternative strategies may have become available that were not an option when the original choice was made. As such, proactive and forward-looking managers should reevaluate their mix of management strategies for the current enterprise mix on some periodic basis. This might best be done by involving other members of the management team to increase the opportunities of gaining new insights, or of looking at the same management challenges but seeing alternative strategies as a possible solution. Where the management team is small with limited outside experience, it may be justified to hire an outside consultant or some other expert for their unique perspective on the challenges and suggestions for alternative strategies. And I think that's my final slide here, Jeff.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jay. Appreciate that. You gave us some great information about evaluating those risk strategies and our decisions. I know I especially liked your comment that we cannot make perfect decisions with perfect outcomes. Makes me feel a lot better, and I need to share that with others, that I'm not perfect. But anyway, we had a few questions come in, and I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, share two of those questions with you before we continue. And as you're asking, responding to those, if the audience wouldn't mind responding to the polling questions that are coming up on their screen. So you talked about evaluating the strategies and making decisions about that. How often should you do that? Should it be annually, monthly? Is there some other time frame or points at which you should kind of wholesale evaluate those decisions and strategies?
That's a good question, Jeff, because it should be an ongoing evaluation, because it really should be an evaluation of all the decisions that are going into that strategy to make sure that they're aligned with the strategy. So in that respect, it should be ongoing. However, strategy is a little bit more long-term, and it needs to be done in the overall strategy as far as changing directions or abandoning a strategy. That decision is a fairly significant one, and it needs to be done in the context of the time frame over which you are expecting to implement the strategy. So, say a marketing plan that's on an annual basis, at the time you do that, you might have certain trigger points in there that might take you in one direction or another as a part of the plan. But the overall evaluation of that strategy would probably be an annual event, if you will, as you think of how you're going to market your crop. Something else like a crop rotation, or maybe something that you're doing on a land purchase, those you're looking at, you know, further down the road as some different strategies that you have there. Equipment ownership is one of them. Do you lease? Do you buy? Same thing with the land. Do you lease? Do you buy? Those are a little bit more longer term, so you need to look at those in the context of how long out you expect to be implementing that strategy. But the evaluation is ongoing, if you will, but you don't want to abandon them too early before you know that you fully implemented them.
Okay, great point. So the second question and final question, and I'm selecting from some here, and I apologize to those people that we don't get to have time to ask all their questions. What is the best way to keep multiple decision makers making decisions consistent with that strategy? So you have multiple managers on your ag enterprise, and how do you keep them all going in the same direction consistent with that selected strategy?
Well, if I had to just use one word, it'd be communication. And, unfortunately, farmers and ranchers aren't known to be the best communicators, especially with their staff that works for them, or maybe family members that they're working with. So that's the number one piece there. And I cringe because so few people actually write down business plans and write down business strategies. But that's by far the best way to communicate it, is to put it into words, make sure it's in front of everybody and everybody's aware of it, and it's easy for them to access. And, you know, John mentioned some of those different risk management strategies. Say it's maintaining reserves of some sort, hay reserves. You know, you don't want to have somebody that's managing the cattle that has that as part of their strategy, and then somebody else is doing the haying over there, and all of a sudden they're selling all your hay, and you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So that's why it's important to have regular meetings. It's why it's important to put things in writing, and map out those strategies, and make sure everybody's aware of them. And don't be afraid to put things on paper.
Sure. Right. And especially it seems important in agriculture where they have to make, even if it's a single decision maker, there are so many decisions being made each and every day that it's important to keep that strategy in mind. So thank you for that, Jay. Also want to thank again today's speakers, John Hewlett at the University of Wyoming and Jay Parsons at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Both are founding members of the Right Risk Education team. I said I would share the information with people, how they can download the information or access it. You can access a recording of this webinar, a copy of the presentations, and some other information by visiting the rightrisk.org website. And from that website, you would go to courses and then evaluating risk strategies. So again, it's doesn't take very long, downloads very quickly. But again, going to the rightrisk.org website will give you a plethora of useful risk management information. We've also mentioned a number of URLs and email addresses throughout this webinar. We put that into a single reference. So if you would like to have that, simply click on the file name listed, click Save to My Computer at the bottom of the download, and you can save that to your own information or to your own desktop or other computer device. So that's available for you to do as well. Let me close by again extending thanks to Jay and John for their first-class presentations on risk strategies and evaluating risk strategies. I would also like to thank our Right Risk team that is behind the scenes doing a yeoman's effort to make sure that this and all of our webinars come across as useful information and as easily accessible as possible. We couldn't do it without the support of our host institutions, University of Wyoming, University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and Colorado State University, as well as with our sponsor, the USDA Risk Management Agency. They help us to make this a valuable effort in our education for producers. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs. We have them regularly, and there should be some more as we move into the fall and winter, so please pay attention to that. Until then, We offer you our sincerest hope for success in managing risk in your situation. And for that, I am Jeff Trunnell for the Right Risk team. Thank you very much.